League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of The Rundown. I am here with Emily Pelfrey. Before we jump into our conversation and I introduce you to this lovely woman I had the opportunity to chat with the other day, obviously, Emily is not Joey. He will speak more about it when he's back. But for those of you who don't know, this past Monday, Janet, Joey's hilarious and sweet and loyal mother, who was very much a part of our podcast, passed from pancreatic cancer. I will let him share more about that. He has shared it publicly with our community. You all have been so wonderful and supportive and loving to him, and he appreciates that. We appreciate that. He'll be back on our next episode, but for now, we're just giving him some time with his family. So the other day, I had a very fun opportunity to sit down with Emily and Carol Costello from The God Hook. We were talking about season two, all about the Ohio Craigslist killings. Emily is a badass prosecutor who has worked at the county, state, and federal levels. And she is working with Carol, and she is podcasting, and you're a teacher, and you're a mom, and you're all these fabulous things. So I said, what better person to talk about some of the goings on between the Karen Reed and the Diddy trial than someone who actually knows what they're talking about? So welcome to I Think Not, Emily. We are so honored that you're here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about other cases that were not my own and to kind of pick them apart in ways that I know people did with mine.
Yes. You worked on season two with Carol in what capacity?
I met Carol. I was her legal advisor on her first season. She and I just developed this friendship. And when she was thinking about things to cover for her second season, I was like, well, hey, I tried this case. I prosecuted this guy with two other attorneys. And I told her all about it. And she looked it up in the news. She's like, well, it's kind of been covered. I'm like, no, but it really hasn't been covered in all of the ways that it should have been. And so through our friendship and just through talking, we decided it would be a really cool thing to cover the Craigslist killings from Ohio as an entire series. And it was a really great opportunity. It opened a lot of doors that had previously been left open. You know, in criminal trials, you don't always hear the whole story.
Yeah.
A lot of things are never presented to the jury.
Yep.
So I was like, we need to like get all of this out. And my biggest thing with working with Carol on any of these episodes or on any other things that we've talked about is just trying to, I don't want to say dumb down the legal side, but to like take it out of the media. Okay, when people say like all the legalese and they use the big words, I'm like, No one does that, guys. You need to make it simplistic so that jurors understand it.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Dumb it down.
Yes.
I need to know the words. I don't need to be up here Googling jargon.
No.
I need you to tell me the information. I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you all, the way I have not binged a show like I binged this last weekend, it is called The God Hook. The season two is all about the Ohio Craigslist killings. I sat down with Carol and Emily the other day and we're talking about how that case relates to the Diddy case. And I wanted to expand on it with Emily because she is a prosecutor and I really wanted to get her perspective. Now, as you all know, there were no cameras allowed in the courtroom. So we were all reading it. A lot of things that we don't understand. I want to talk about this when we jump into the Diddy case, but I find it really frustrating to not see words coming out of someone someone's mouth. So I found that really frustrating in the Diddy case. I said this off mic to Emily when we were texting. There were issues that when they were nearing the end of the Diddy case that I had with the prosecution because I thought there would be more. They had 34 witnesses, but we even reported here that they were kind of all corroborating. And I was like, right, but is there more? And I also kind of didn't want to put it out into the universe. Maureen Comey is a fantastic prosecutor. I want to get into it. And so that's why Emily is here. I'm so glad you agreed to come. Really quickly, before we jump into Diddy, I wanted to give you all some post-trial information after Karen Reed was found not guilty. Now, Emily, did you follow the Karen Reed case?
I followed it probably just as much as the average person. I saw things here and there. Mm-hmm. But I will say, since doing all of the prosecutor stuff, I can't sit and watch Law & Order in the house because I end up just yelling at the TV the whole time. So when everybody like comes out and they're like commentating on it or this is what's happening, I'm like, no, but that's like only a 16th of what it is, or it's just completely fantasized to get the headline, right? To make it sound super sexy. So the parts that I saw, you know, I know the basics and that it basically was a battle of the experts at the end.
Not that you have the time with everything that you do. I think you would pull your hair out at the prosecution. There was so much misconduct and corruption. It's kind of like a delicious thing to jump into for a person like you. And I know what you mean about the Law and Order thing, because there was a show called Smash and everyone on Broadway was like, that's not right. That's not you know, same. Singer, dancer.
Yeah.
Very prestigious prosecutor. We're like the same, Emily. It's like looking into a mirror. Okay.
But it is like, I mean, I will say this right off the bat. Like, people think lawyers are also smart. They're not these brainiac people. I mean, so whatever idea people have of attorneys, it's not that deep.
I have so many questions. You're good for 3 hours, right, Emily? Okay.
I have all day. Yes.
Just a couple of updates in Karen Reed, and then we're going to jump into the Diddy conversation and sort of expand upon the conversation that Emily and Carol and I had the other day. There have been a bunch of people rehomed post-trial. Obviously, Michael Proctor lost his job. Remember Kelly Dever, the little smart aleck on the stand from the Canton PD who had the false memories? Well, she's on administrative leave. Okay. And remember Shannon Burgess, the expert who lied about having a bachelor's degree? Well, I can't say exactly what happened, but I will just tell you, when you go to the Aperture website, he is no longer listed as an expert. You probably, I don't know, need a bachelor's to have that. On Kelly Dever, yesterday, the Boston Police Commissioner, Michael Cox, he was speaking at something, and of course, the question turned to Karen Reed. He was like, I have nothing to do with Karen. I didn't even know Kelly Dever had anything to do with the case.
I have nothing to do with Karen Reed. Matter of fact, I didn't even know this person was associated with a Karen Reed case. I was struck, like, what do I have to do with a Karen Reed case? I never have said those words together. And so the fact is, you know, it's much to do about nothing.
That came out of his mouth. He also said this.
That case is over. And, you know, we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about. I have nothing to do with Karen Reed.
Honestly, it's par for the course. John, remember, was a Boston cop. And so, with all due respect, Commissioner Cox, I think we're going to keep screaming about this corruption. So not only that, Yuri Bukenik, remember Michael Proctor's superior, who said the John O'Keefe murder investigation was carried out with integrity. And what was the other word he said? Honor. Honor and integrity. Yeah, he's been moved out of the Norfolk DA's office as well. And then right after that, the very next day, David DiCicco was also rehomed. I remember both of them were on the text chain with Michael Proctor. So that's Shannon Burgess, Kelly Dever, Michael Proctor. Don't forget Brian Tully from season one, Yuri DiCicco. Do you know the whole thing about Michael Proctor's text messages?
No, but like already I'm freaked out by all of this.
Emily, I want to like put you in a papoose.
Please.
And just carry you around all day and tell you about this case. Well, he was fired from the Massachusetts State Trooper League of Men or whatever it's called. And he is trying to get his job back. And can you guess what his defense was? So he had sent these awful texts calling Karen Reed a cunt and saying she was guilty before the investigation. Can you give me, with your big head full of knowledge, what his defense for wanting to get his job back is? I feel like you're going to nail it.
I mean, there's so many ways to go with this. I mean, we can always go the easy route of the pension if that was taken away.
Mm-mm.
Is alcohol or drugs involved in there someplace?
He did drive a cruiser one day while he was drunk. His defense was everyone else was doing it.
Seriously.
And people say way worse things than me.
Maybe. Okay. But no.
That is actually his defense. People say way worse. I'm not the only one. He did it too. That is an actual grown man's defense. Also from that group chat, Jeff Kotkowski was also rehomed from the Norfolk DA. So just in the Massachusetts State Police alone, 5 people have been rehomed and reassigned. Turtle Boy had his first interview with Action Jackson. He talked about the corruption and all about Bev hating him. And this is too good. I just have to play this audio.
Give me the truth. That's all I care about. And Judge Cannoni, very specifically, was not going to allow us to tell the truth to the jury. Mm. The fact that she hid the feds from the jury, not once, 2 times, even after being slapped down by jurors, not slapped down by us. I mean, we were always respectful to her. Jurors said, once we found out that these were feds, why didn't you tell us that? That makes all the world a difference.
Yeah, it did.
We thought they might be insurance folks.
And what was her argument? Because it would have biased the jury, but doesn't all evidence bias a jury? Isn't that the point of evidence?
No, her argument was more along the lines of, you have my ruling.
Okay, yeah. Because I said so.
Because I said so,
yeah. You've been doing this a long time. Do you think she's one of the small percentage of judges who would not allow that to be mentioned? Or do you think if you had any other judge, do you think that judge would have done the same thing she did? Or do you think they would have allowed FBI to be mentioned?
My experience is that I think every other judge I've ever been in front of in my life, those probably number not in the hundreds, but in the thousands. Every other judge would allow that in.
Really? Wow.
Every other judge would allow that in. Every one of us on the defense team in the first trial and the second were gobsmacked that she would not allow in even a modicum of information. We can't go into what the investigation consists of. We didn't want to know who the investigators were. We didn't care if it was the DOJ or the FBI, whatever. Just to be able to say the federal government opened an investigation and this is what they hired ARCA, and ARCA worked for and was commissioned by the federal government. And this is what they found, period. That does not in any way, shape, form, or fashion prejudice the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth was so adamant that if that was known, it would allow such inherent credibility to be gleaned about ARCA. She wouldn't allow it to happen. She was never going to allow it to happen.
Do you feel like she was doing this because she's bad at her job? Or do you think she just doesn't like you and Karen Reed? Because that was the vibe I got. I don't think you're getting the Christmas
card. All of the above.
Okay. All of the above.
Yeah, no, look, there was no question that from the beginning, I didn't pick a bone with her. I mean, you saw Aiden from the moment I walked into trial on September 25th, 2022. I was respectful. I was cordial. I was as dignified as an officer of the court could be. I asked for pro hac vice. I was elegant in my arguments to her, always respectful of the bench, always respectful of the robe. That's how I'm built. She could not stand me.
All to say, the Karen Reed case continues to unfold. More on that later. But I have Emily here to talk about the Diddy case. He was facing 5 federal counts, the RICO charge, obviously, the 2 counts of sex trafficking and the 2 counts of engaging in prostitution. He was found guilty for only the prostitution charges. Now, Emily, before we jump in, what is your history with this case? How much did you follow?
With the Diddy case, the one thing that I found interesting with it, as I do with any high profile case, is how are people going to try it versus the cases that occur in any state court or any federal court on a daily. The stories that come out of the courtroom about testimony, how people present the theories, really are just so different based on who's covering them. And what was interesting about this case, number one, it's a federal, so they don't have cameras. So that's a norm, which I don't really understand. I mean, it's 2025. Put cameras in the courtrooms.
Can I ask you how you feel about that as a prosecutor?
I mean, there's so many conspiracy theories and what people think about how they interpret things, right? I think put a camera in there. But I was also one of those prosecutors that was like, I'm going to give you my whole file. I don't care. Because if I can't prove the case from my file, why am I even going forward with it? So I say, just show it. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares? People can't mince words. There's so many ways to interpret body language or
totally
how somebody looks or whatever. So I say, just put the camera in there. But that's the Fed system.
Okay.
What interests me is human trafficking, sex trafficking, prostitution. Since I was one of the prosecutor that kind of focused my practice area on that. How is it going to be presented? How are the defense attorneys in this case going to bastardize these women or judge them any differently than, you know, in a small court? So I find it interesting just from the aspect of watching that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what's interesting about these cases is when there's a civil settlement, how that's going to be used against someone. The prosecution or the Fed is only bringing this case because it's high profile and there's all this money out there and they have to do it or else they're going to look bad. So where some people might look at it one way, I look at it from like a different angle. So, But this one just annoyed me on all kinds of levels. But of course I was fascinated. I'm like, please tell me more about like the freak offs and the baby oil because it's just so fucking stupid.
Right. What did you think of that? Because I want to get into the trafficking aspect of it. For me as a reader, because I wasn't watching, I was like, okay, he used baby oil. It's gross. It's weird. He ruined hotel rooms. What do you think about, if you know from what you read, what do you think about the prosecution's presentation of the sex trafficking? The RICO stuff, I don't really want to focus on that because you really have inside knowledge as to the sex trafficking. Did you see anything that they could have done better, that they should have focused more on in the things that you read about? What were your thoughts?
Of course, you're going to read the most about the domestic violence that occurred, right? So you're going to see the video played over and over and referred to over and over because it's sensational. And it quite honestly is something that's there that they can see. The baby oil and some of the other things that came with the prostitution and the sex freak-offs, let's be honest. I mean, yeah, you talk about it a lot because it keeps attention. Trials are long and they're boring. Looking back at like, well, how long was the prosecution's close? 5 hours?
Yeah.
The defense was 4 hours?
Is someone paying me by the hour? That's a hostage situation.
Well, and so like when you're in that situation, you're talking for so long, you're like, okay, I have to wake up the jurors again. So let's talk about the baby oil. It's all a song and dance and it's all theater. When it comes to these, it's really hard. I mean, you're dealing with such sensitive things and people are judging, especially with the makeup of the jurors in this, where it was not equal.
How do you think they got away with that?
It's just the way that the jury selection works, right? So when you're going through and you're choosing a jury, you can excuse jurors for certain reasons, but you can't excuse people based on religion or sex or race. The prosecution and the defense both have a certain number of challenges that they can put forth. Some they can just say, we're excusing this juror. We want this juror out for no reason in particular. So it's just the luck of the draw. And then you have the alternates, which those people have to sit there the whole time.
Yeah, I was an alternate. It was so frustrating.
Because you want to say something. You can't.
Emily, I always want to say something. It's just, you're going to bet if I'm sitting there, I'm going to want to say something.
Mm-hmm.
It might not even be relevant to what we're talking about, but I want to talk. You know what I mean?
And you just have to sit there. And then at the end, like you've dedicated like all this time of your life to this. And at the end, you don't really get to even weigh in on the verdict.
Yeah.
So all of these little things go into how someone's going to present the case or how it's going to be perceived.
I am still in shock. I know you weren't following it as closely as I was, but when you heard the verdict, what were your thoughts?
Not surprised.
Really?
Unfortunately. Well, and this is why. You'll hear people often say things like, well, I know that he did it, but it wasn't proven.
Right.
Which is a contradiction in itself, because you're supposed to go into this trial or a presentation of the facts thinking that the person didn't do it. You have to prove it to me.
Right.
And you're proving it to me beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of this is someone's like, well, I think he did it, but you didn't prove it. I'm like, but you were supposed to walk into this not thinking he did it. So now if you're thinking he did it, you've met that burden. Because if you're sitting in presentation, you're sitting there and looking at the person, you have to walk into that saying, this person is innocent until right. you have proven to me that they are guilty. But at the conclusion of that, if you then say, well, I think he did it, well, then you've already overcome the initial thought that you had when you sat there as a jury thinking that person didn't do it. So you can't say, well, I think you did it, but you didn't prove it beyond a doubt.
I will admit, I can see from myself that I am too emotionally invested. None of it made sense. I have no brains behind that theory. That's my brand, Emily. I got a lot of emotion and, you know, the brain's iffy on some days. It's hard to separate my emotions from it. I just can't detach my emotions. The thing about this trial for me was, and this isn't right, I'm acknowledging that this is not an intelligent take, but for survivors of domestic violence, of sexual abuse, of trafficking, the verdict is so disappointing. And I think for those survivors, it might have even been triggering. I hate that word, but it's just such a slap in the face. I'm saying this, and I do believe it. I don't believe this acquittal was born out of innocence, specifically on the trafficking charge, the RICO, totally separate conversation. I actually think that the prosecution did a good job. So I was trying to kind of make sense of it. Really, the day before you and I spoke, I was like, does not guilty just mean that money won? Those lawyers, seven figures probably they were making. Let's be fucking for real. If Diddy weren't Diddy, if he were a broke man from Queens or a brown kid from Harlem, the outcome would have looked very different. He wouldn't have been planning a 4th of July barbecue, which he was. He would be in Orange. So to me, and I want to hear your smart take on this, my emotional take is it just proves once again that if you are rich enough, famous enough, or male enough, the system is going to squint its eyes. So until, I didn't see anything. It just, I recognize that for me, the verdict was more than a headline. It's just a reminder. The trafficking was there. One thing that Maureen Comey did, which I thought was really strong, and I think I mentioned it in another rundown, was she said, all you have to believe is that Cassie one time was coerced at one time. I think the word trafficking just mentally means something different to people. Tell me the smart version of that. I don't know how you can see a woman be dragged across the floor and be like, nope, every time that guy wanted her to have sex with other people and him, she wanted it. How? Make it make sense.
Yeah. But I think you're fine with the emotional take on it. I have absolutely no problem with that because it means, number one, that you're paying attention and that you care about these issues. So I am fine with the emotional take on that. I think there's also another way to look at the way that these verdicts came out. He still was convicted of a couple of things. So those in themselves are victories. I believe it was Cassie's attorney that was saying something to the extent like the jurors believed this enough to convict on this count.
They believed the prosecution because there was paper evidence.
Yes.
There was Venmos and there were flights booked and everything. Mm-hmm. But they didn't believe the victims. They didn't believe their story. They didn't believe they didn't want to do it. They didn't understand how coercion works. They didn't understand the Stockholm syndrome. Mm-hmm. The prostitution, he faces a max of 10 years on each charge. I doubt he'll get that. They took this electronic evidence and they're like, got it, can't look away from that.
Yes.
But then they looked at these women and said, nah, I don't believe you, or you would have, I don't believe you.
And that's why there's never a perfect victim. They will find anything that they can. So whether it's socioeconomic, whether it's racial, they are going to have a hard time convicting on these things. And yeah, I think that the word trafficking does freak people out because they just envision, you know, someone is smuggling people across a border someplace and that it's not, can happen in these upscale parties or what have you. So that's incredibly frustrating. It's frustrating with the RICO. I get that. That's a whole different issue to talk about in the trafficking. Is there another way to label trafficking like we had talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. So it's not as scary. And maybe that is something that we need to start looking at.
Yeah.
But I guess I want to look at it in some positive light in that he was convicted. He will spend some time in prison. I love the fact that the judge is like, fuck no, you're not getting out. I'm not giving you bail. Like your own attorney was like, no, you are a domestic abuser and you're violent. So you're not going anywhere.
Emily, I was refreshing my phone all day. Yeah. I have chills right now. The thought of him walking that day, and Kid Cudi wrote this brilliantly eloquent letter just saying, we, the people who testified, are terrified.
Of course.
If you let him out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, because my brain can go anywhere. I am a goldfish. I will follow a story, a theory. I made a whole live show connecting Diddy to the death of Whitney Houston.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch.
Don't ask, Emily. You will be here until next Tuesday.
Love it.
There's a lot of people saying Diddy got to the jury. Mm-hmm. The jury was not sequestered.
Ridiculous, by the way.
Is that ridiculous in a federal case?
I can say that when there are high profile cases, and I've done enough of them, I haven't done the high profile cases on the federal side. I've done them on the state stateside. I did a case way back in the day where I prosecuted a police chief who broke into the surrogate's home for Sarah Jessica Parker, I believe was who it was. So I wanted to sequester those people because you can't keep people away from the news. You can't keep people away from their phones, from social media. I get it. And the jurors walk in and they're like, no, we're not going to do this. So unless the court is keeping you locked in a hotel with your phones away, with no televisions, there's always going to be some kind of possibility that they're going to find out information that will not be eventually admitted into trial, or that they're not going to feel some kind of influence, or family's not going to feel influence. I don't get it. And that, like, they're not supposed to talk to their spouse or their partner or whoever they're living with about what they're doing. Like, they're not even supposed to say that I'm sitting in on this trial. Seriously? I don't get it.
That's just not the way humans operate.
No. No, it's not. Mm-mm.
So since you didn't follow the case, and I don't mean to say that to be rude. I just want to acknowledge.
No, you're the expert on this.
Crazy person. We saw time and time again in this case and all over that Diddy would find people. Mm-hmm. People would get texts on their phone. They would get emails. This man has the loyalty of some pretty, is it scrupulous or unscrupulous? If you have your scruples, are you good with the scruples? Unscrupulous.
I think you're scrupulous.
What is it? Is it
keep going. Let's keep going with that one.
I don't know. He's got some nasty people.
Yes.
It's much bigger than we saw in the trial.
It always is.
We're talking assault, murder, guns. None of it came up. Do you think that's more than a sensational headline? Do you think that is actually possible?
I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I used to say this thing, like, the most simplistic explanation of something is probably the truth. So you can go into all of the theories, but like, when you break it down, there's money, there's influence, there are years and years of facts, proof, discussion about violent behavior, about different circles that people. So there's all of this other stuff going on. So is it really a stretch to think, well, he can blow up a car, he can pull all of these people into a room, have these giant freak offs with no one ever talking about it and all of this stuff. But it's going to be weird for me to think that he can get to Joe Schmo, who's sitting on a jury, who I have one friend that can go out and find out on Google where his family lives, where her family lives, find their contact information and just reach out. It's highly possible.
Mm-hmm. There is also the issue that the prosecution did not call Christina Corum. And for those of you who don't know, Christina Corum was not even Diddy's right-hand man. She was his right arm, the glean to the Jeffrey Epstein. She did, she saw, she texted, she emailed, she covered up, she paid people off. We saw this time and time again from all of the witnesses, how heavily she was involved. And me, I was, my horse, it was high. I was up there and I said, the reason they're not calling Christina Corum is because they're going to take down Diddy and then they're going to take down Christina. Christina is going to face charges. That day I ate my shoe and my words because Diddy wasn't found guilty on the charges I thought he was. Who knows if they're going to charge Christina Corum? If she has all of these answers, I mean everything, Emily. Mm-hmm. There is
paperwork, all the
stuff. Electronic paper trail. Mm-hmm. Everyone who testified, who was part of Diddy's little entourage, got immunity. Mm-hmm. So my thought was she had asked for immunity and they said no. And then she said, I'm not going to testify. If Diddy is the godfather and she's the consigliere or whatever, how do you do a trial without that guy, the woman who knows all the answers?
So there are a lot of reasons why witnesses aren't called. It could be credibility. It could be fear. It could be intimidation. Okay. It could be that there is some possibility of another investigation down the road coming and we just don't know about it, right?
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Cases like these, especially if they've now suffered this not guilty on these big charges, they can take years and years to put together. So like where we want instant gratification, we want those answers, it might not come yet. Mm-hmm. But there are a zillion and two reasons as to why some people will not testify or will not be called to testify. And without talking to the prosecutors directly and to their trial strategy, we can just sit here and make our own guesses and hypotheses. In these cases like this, it might have been that she just had enough that she would have been torn apart even by the defense, who could have been like, you know, they could have thought if she had all this information and then she gets crossed by the defense, that might then make her look like the guilty person on the stand. All of the blame is put on her, which is an automatic not guilty for him then. So there are lots of different reasons.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way because I really thought she would have a separate set of charges. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that maybe the defense would actually throw the guilt toward.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of that.
And if they're able to point all of that stuff and be like, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, she's the one that is on all of these correspondence. She's taking advantage of the situation. She's taking advantage of his name, and she's able, look at how much she's profited financially. Look at the bias that she has toward this. Then the jurors take their focus off of the actual defendant, and they now have a new defendant on the stand that they want to put all that blame on. Mm-hmm. Especially if he's this high profile person and he's coming across, you know, holding the Bible, and he has his whole fucking family cheering him on and all of it, which they've pointed out numerous times, right? In the closing, mm-hmm. how many times were they like, this is his family, send this man home, he's a family guy, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. If the jurors see an alternate and they like him and they don't like this woman, there goes your whole case.
Hmm. Interesting. There is nothing involving her other than her name being mentioned over 1,000 times. All right, I kind of have a complex question, and this just came to me, so I'm fleshing it out. Do you think, as a prosecutor, in your work and what you've seen, do you think our system is broken?
Okay, this is a really loaded question and answer. Do I think that the system is broken?
Yeah.
I do not think the system is broken. I think that ideally the court, the presentation by the state, by the defense, due process, the judiciary, the system itself is there, and it's better than any system that exists in the world. And mind you, it happens thousands of times daily throughout our country, in small courts and big courts. So from that, the system itself is a good thing. Now, are the people mm-hmm. that are behind running that system mm-hmm. the problem? That's where I would say yes.
Okay.
And this is like my soapbox that I will get on, is that when people go to vote or they see these trials, as much as they're spending time learning about the facts, learn about how the system itself works. Mm-hmm. Look at how the judges who are ultimately hearing these cases, look at the prosecutors, either on the federal or the state side, are the ones who are making the charging decisions, and then staff their agencies or their bench or what have you with people that they choose. So it's incredibly important that people do their due diligence when they are looking to vote for a county judge.
Yeah. Yes.
That county judge may end up one day being a state Supreme Court judge.
Mm-hmm.
If they have an ideal one way or the other, most likely not going to change by the time they get up to these higher positions. And then you have to think, okay, well, now we're dealing with the federal system. Where do federal judges come from? Federal judges are appointed mm-hmm. at the leisure of president. So you have to really think about, how is that system working?
Yeah, I think that is so important.
It really is. And I implore anyone who listens to this to really start paying attention to how judges get to the positions that they're in.
And DAs in some places.
Absolutely.
Even sheriffs in some places. There's so many positions.
All of it.
That not everyone knows are elected.
If you look at different states, so like in the state of Ohio where I reside, it used to be that judges' political affiliations were not attached on the ballot. So it's supposed to be completely impartial. Not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have political affiliation tied to that person when they're on the ballot. Someone will go through and just vote all one way or the other, not knowing
yeah.
what that person actually stands for or how it's going to impact them down the road. That's my soapbox. So do I think that the system itself, like the actual court system and the way that it is supposed to operate, is broken? I do not. But I fear for the future. I know this is like total doom and gloom. I really do worry, and I'm concerned about the way the judiciary works for like my children's generation.
Mm-hmm.
Now you put into play with that the influence of power and money, and now you're all just fucked. Yeah.
That's it right there for me, Emily. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. When I asked the question, I didn't know what my own answer was, but I agree. I don't think the system is broken. I think it is working exactly as it was built to. The caveat to that is the way it is structured is to protect the powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The powerful has money, means. Mm-hmm. Diddy had a freaking basketball team worth of lawyers that were there to just work around the system. Mm-hmm. We weren't talking about guilt or innocence. We were talking about little nuances. There is this one man, he always comes up on my feed. Mm-hmm. I first saw him on the Diary of a CEO podcast, and he is a divorce lawyer. And he was talking about the time, I think I've talked about this on a podcast. He was talking about the time mm-hmm. that he was defending a man who abused his wife. And he was saying, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a defense attorney. Everyone has the right to a fair trial. That's my job. But I knew this guy was a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. I wanted her to win.
Yeah.
I'm an expensive, high profile lawyer. Mm-hmm. And she had a new public attorney. Mm-hmm. His job is to ensure that his client got a fair trial. And her lawyer made some clerical error about the yeah. presentation of evidence. And he was saying in his head, willing her the right words, the right verbiage to use so that she could get this piece into evidence.
The key piece of evidence they had was a photograph of this woman's face after my client had allegedly beat her up quite badly. And getting a photograph into evidence is very easy, but it requires a very specific phrasing. So what you say is, I'd like this to be marked for identification. You mark the photo, and then you hand it to the witness, or you hand it to the court officer who hands it to the witness, and you say, I'm showing you what's been marked as petitioner's one for identification. Do you recognize that? Yes. What do you recognize it to be? It's a photograph. Does that photograph fairly and accurately depict your face after he beat you up? Or does it accurately reflect your face on the date you've been discussing? Yes. Your Honor, I'd like it put into evidence. That's it. It's easy. Does it fairly and accurately depict?
And this man gets choked up and he says,
opposing counsel said, I'd like this to be marked. And then she said, could you hand it to the witness? And she said, what is that a photo of? So I did my job. I said, objection. She's asking about the contents of a document, not an evidence, which is my job. Judge said, sustained.
Which means
my objection is correct. So she said, I'm sorry. Who took this photo? And she said, I don't know who took it. She says, okay, well, what is it a photo of? Stood up again, objection, asking about the contents of a document, not an evidence. And I could see opposing counsel getting flustered because she didn't know the words. And my internal dialogue at that moment was, just say it. Like, just get it right. Like, just say fairly, does it fairly and accurately depict? Does it, just say it. I remember looking at the judge and thinking, like, you're letting this happen. You're letting this happen. Don't let this happen. Like, she's poor. She's poor. That's why she's going to lose. She's going to lose because she's poor. And she can't afford a lawyer. And he's going to win because he can afford a lawyer that knows how to put a document into evidence. And there's something really wrong about that. And the judge just let her drown. And the case got dismissed. And we walked out. And as we walked out, my client patted me on the back and he said, you know, a good lawyer is better than 20 stick-up men. And I remember thinking, this is not a good day. It's not a good day.
Now she's going to lose because yeah. she's poor. And that was it. And to me, that's it. The system is meant to, it's built to protect the powerful.
Yeah. When I prosecuted cases, I like to think that I did the best that I could with the evidence that I had. Mm-hmm. And so if I saw something and I'm like, this shouldn't be a charge, I would dismiss it. I'm like, I don't give a shit like how it comes across, because if I don't have the evidence, it's not fair. Where I have had feelings in the past that bother me is if I'm up against someone, mind you, public defender or retained counsel for defense, mm-hmm. and they're not doing a good job, mm-hmm. even though I might think, and I'm thinking of one case in particular where I was like, I know she did it. I've offered a plea. She should take my plea, because even though I know she mm-hmm. did it, my evidence, you know, could go one way or the other.
Sure.
But she didn't take the plea. And now she's in prison for life. It just drove me nuts because I watched this defense attorney fumble. Mm-hmm. I watched him make terrible arguments.
Yeah.
And I would present something like, all you need is like one word, kind of the same as the story that you were just telling. I'm like, just make this one objection and this isn't coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like to win an unfair fight.
Yeah.
So I can see how he felt that way.
Yeah.
Because when the system works, it's working because both parties know what they're doing. And I will say though, that I think there's this big misconception that if you're a public defender or you are not retained, like some big high profile person, that you're not going to get a fair trial. Mm-hmm. Some of the best defense attorneys that I know and that I worked with were appointed by the court.
Thank you for saying that. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I think that there is a misconception. So thank you for saying that.
And I think it's because the public defenders, especially that are appointed by the court, they're in those courts every day. Mm-hmm. They know the attorneys, they know law enforcement, they know the judge, the bailiff, everybody. So they know the ins and outs of that court. Whereas if you are some big high profile attorney and you're going into this especially if it's a smaller area, you're seen as like the big bad person. Mm-hmm. You might have all the money, but you may not have the influence within that little court. Now, I'm not talking about the big national stage, like a Diddy or a Karen Reed kind of thing, but public defenders that are appointed by the court, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to say, are better than the big hired guns.
Yeah. And when I told that story, I didn't mean to make it sound like that, but thank you for saying that. Cause
No, not at all. No.
I totally agree. And they work so freaking hard. They are so overworked. Artemis says in the chat, the defense kept asking people about leaving. Like, you stayed, so that is consent. And as a woman who stayed in an abusive relationship for 20 years, my staying was not consent to be abused.
Oh my gosh.
I thought leaving would end in some sort of catastrophe. I really think only people who have been in it understand that. And they did keep saying that in the trial.
Mm-hmm.
To those 8 men on the jury, they just didn't get it. And I think for thousands, tens of thousands read, why didn't you leave? Why did you come back? And I just wanted to scream, you just fucking don't get it.
Yeah.
I could pull my hair out.
But that's why it's important that you continue to talk about this and stories like this are shared. And I hope that she is in a safe space now, or Artemis, I'm sorry, that you are now in a safe space, or that you've been able to find some kind of assistant that does keep you safe. But it's important to keep talking about these things, because even if we're able to talk to one person who now is like, oh, I didn't think about it this way before, if that person's then faced with a friend who's going through it or is seated on a jury, the education that you can get from a podcast like this, you can then share with the other people in the jury.
Yeah.
And you can be like, no, yeah, consent and staying are not the same thing.
This is nothing new to our audience, but there are some survivors who wait decades. Fear, shame, power imbalance in the Diddy trial, that's what protects abusers. Not reporting is not a red flag. That is self-preservation. That is someone trying to stay alive. Because every time Cassie did leave, Diddy would find her. It is actually normal.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I hate to say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For people not to come out with their abuse. To me and our community is so empathetic and so locked in, and they get it. I'm in this bubble where I can't see outside, where it's like, what don't you get? And again, mm-hmm, that's my emotion coming through,
mm-hmm,
of thinking, how do you not understand coercion? I'm getting hot. Okay.
Yeah. I want to say too that I think people just see it as this physical thing and they don't think past that, especially in trafficking situations. Does this person affect their employment, their reputation? Something as simplistic as, do they hold their own bank accounts? Do they even have their, yes, license or their birth certificate? Do they have access to the things that they would need to even go get a,
yes,
job, to apply for a job, to apply for an apartment? So I think the whole staying and consent thing, that does, it drives me insane.
It's so upsetting. I kept wanting to like hit my head against a wall. And Diddy would find her.
Of course he would.
He had people everywhere. He has, mm-hmm, limitless amount of money. It was just the most ridiculous thing. And they kept saying it. Why didn't you leave? Why did you stay? Why did you post this selfie? Why did you tell him you loved? I'm like, you all are just daft. The last thing I want to end on, Emily, I'm so grateful for your time. We touched on this with Carol, and I just kind of want to expand on it for our audience. The perfect victim.
Mm-hmm.
One woman went by an alias, and that was Jane. Mm-hmm. And she was one of his partners, his last partner before the raid. Her integrity, her demeanor, everything was called into question. And a lot of times, I don't know if you've seen this, but survivors don't come to court polished.
Oh, yeah.
They're upset or crying or angry or complicated. And then whatever that complexity is weaponized against them.
Mm-hmm.
You were calm or you were erratic, because unless you bleed and report and scream and take pictures or video, which, fuck off.
It was there.
We did see a video.
Yeah.
But unless you dress perfectly and you act like a nun and you've never had sex, please don't ever have sex.
Yeah.
And God forbid they've done drugs or drinking or stayed out or wore a short skirt or smiled for a picture. All of the bullshit. And I do feel comfortable saying this is only on women. You know, sometimes I have to add a caveat. I'm like, this happens to men. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It's not the same. And I think that when it comes to voir dire, which is the jury selection, mm-hmm. and the prosecution is choosing them, the voir dire process is also the opportunity for the prosecution, the defense, to talk directly to the jurors. It's their only time during a trial to actually make contact and conversation with these jurors. Mm-hmm. And what I would always try to do is to use that time to really explain that. Like, you might expect to see this, that, or the other thing on the stand from this victim, because that's how you would react. Now, you as a juror, if you don't see this victim or this woman or this survivor on the stand reacting the way that you would see, are you going to hold it against that person or find them less believable? Mm-hmm. And if they waffled at all about that, I'm like, peace out, you're gone, because you're not going to give that person the fair shot. Mm-hmm. You're never going to have the perfect victim, right? And what I would tell my jurors also is that when someone's involved in a situation of trafficking or the prostitution or what have you, they're choosing these people for a certain reason, and they're grooming them little by little by little. So by the end, they're used to such behavior that they're not going to react the way that we might, because we're looking at it through the lens of like our normal and daily lives and how we would react to something. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And my co-counsel in trials used to use this really good example. And he would say that there's a murder on a pirate ship, mm-hmm. and the only witnesses to this actual crime are pirates. Mm-hmm. And pirates usually have a really bad, you know, they're raping and pillaging and doing all of these things, but they're the only people that you have to testify about the crime that this person committed. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it from that point, you're never going to have that perfect victim. But mm-hmm. just because you have a bunch of pirates that would be the testifying witnesses, it doesn't mean that a crime didn't occur.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of alter the way that you are thinking, right?
Yeah. It just gets my heart racing. This trial really had an opportunity to change the narrative, to believe victims. To all the victims and survivors, anyone who has silently carried their abuse or their violence, I'm sorry. I really thought this was going to turn out a better way. I really think that if he had been found guilty of the trafficking charge, knowing how powerful he is, knowing how influential he is, knowing how rich he is, I really feel like we would kind of make people listen, maybe. I just think it could have brought so many women out of the shadows, but it didn't. It just proves again that even with a video, even with audio, voice memos, women still aren't believed. They hold more doubt for survivors than we hold accountability for abusers. And that's just a fact. Mm-hmm. And I just think that this was the opportunity to allow survivors to possibly roar instead of whisper. Mm-hmm. This was the moment. For me, this was the big moment to hold someone like Diddy accountable, and we didn't do it.
You know what gets me, though, and I was thinking this, is that Comey, who is one of the prosecutors in this case, mm-hmm. was involved with the Jeffrey Epstein case and Ghislaine Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Is it Maxwell or Maxby? I always pronounce her name incorrectly.
Maxwell, yeah.
So out of all of these rich and powerful men that have been put forth in the media for charges of rape or for trafficking, it's a woman that's sitting behind bars for mm-hmm. this kind of crime.
Yeah.
And it was the same prosecutor in both cases.
Wow.
Yeah. I was reading stuff about that last night, and I was like, you know what? That's about right.
I was actually nauseous after the verdict. You know, a lot of people, even his defense attorneys, were saying, oh, he was just, you know, having a moment. He's misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And so men get to get angry and beat women, and they're misunderstood. And then a woman has to be a perfect saint, do everything right, report everything on time, just in order to be believed.
Correct.
And I just don't see it changing, because this was the moment. And that's what's so upsetting.
Yes. So how do we change that? And I will give you the Nobel Peace Prize.
Screaming on my Instagram isn't working so far, Emily. I have tried, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You and Carol are making a separate podcast, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So we approach some of these topics, especially with prostitution, socioeconomic, how people are first perceived and then believed by law enforcement. All of that is covered in The God Hook. And I believe that in our next season, we're going to address some of the same topics, including, mm-hmm. if not mainly in regards to the trafficking and sex mm-hmm. trafficking issues.
I don't see a way out of it, because a lot of podcast listeners, true crime podcast listeners are women. Mm-hmm. And most women, not all women, most women don't need the message. Mm-hmm. We actually need men screaming, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. it's not working with women screaming.
Yeah.
We need men because other men listen to men. Well, they listen to women if they like what they see.
Yes.
And then they listen, but they'll listen to men. So I think the answer is, this pains me to say because I don't really like men having microphones, but men need to be talking.
But which kind of men? Because even men, you need the right kind of man to get up and talk about it, right? Like you need, mm-hmm. I'll stereotype, I'm openly owning it, but you need like the manly masculine man
oh, yeah.
to get out there and be like, yeah. this is wrong, this is what it is, because they're going to be perceived a certain way. You know, the Me Too movement was great. I think in some ways it kind of pushed things back a little bit because it was so out there. The message was great, mm-hmm. but we do need more cis men out there talking about it.
I'll tell you the man we need. I've got it. And everyone is going to cringe the minute I say this. Are you ready?
Yes.
Tucker Carlson.
It'll be a cold day in hell if he gets out and says anything. But yes, we do. We need him. We need Joe Rogan out there saying.
Joe Rogan. Yeah.
Please.
That's who needs to say it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Because then men will listen.
Correct.
Nobody listens otherwise. So if you have a connection to Tucker Carlson, I'll text him. You know I'll call anybody, cold call. But it's true. That's who needs to be talking. I could talk about this forever. Emily, I am so grateful for you.
Oh, Ellen, thank you.
I would love to just have a couple little drop episodes because I love hearing your expertise. While my emotion is fun, it's really nice to get the actual facts. You all have got to listen to The God Hook. I haven't listened to season one yet because we were, you know, specifically making the correlations. Mm-hmm. But if you do listen to it, you will hear, unfortunately, so many correlations between the Diddy trial and Robert Beasley's trial. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. And we have, I don't know if you know this, Emily, we have some of the most supportive people in our community.
Oh, yay.
So please give us all the information so that everyone can follow you, not in a creepy way, not like follow you home, but follow you, support you, and just get to know you a little bit better.
Oh, anyone who listens to The God Hook, I appreciate it. There are so many fabulous people that were involved with that case and with that trial. And like we talked about, I was pregnant during that trial, which made it even more emotional for me. But I think that Carol, especially with her storytelling, is amazing.
And her voice, you all.
Amazing.
You have a fantastic voice, too.
Oh, hers is so good.
I want her to talk me to sleep.
Yeah.
It's a great show, you all.
But she's great. The amount of research that went into the case is spectacular. And it really just does tell this story. And I always told her when we first started this, I'm like, you won't believe the characters in this case because it really does, especially like my buddy, the sheriff down that first investigated this case. He is like a character. You can picture him in your mind when you're listening to him speak, but just some really great people. And the relation between Richard Beasley and Diddy, there really are a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. Just Richard Beasley had no money and
yeah.
Diddy has it on.
I think I said Robert Beasley. Did I say Robert Beasley the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Ellen, edit that. Okay.
Sorry. Beasley, just say Beasley. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. It's just yeah. the trafficking and the influence that they have.
Emily Pelfrey, thank you for taking time out of your day and being such an awesome co-host.
Thank you.
Thank you to our Hallelujah, What's It To You tier and above for joining us on this episode. Joey will be back. And thank you all for being so understanding and supportive. And Emily, you're a star for stepping in. Oh, I appreciate
you.
It. I appreciate your expertise, your heart, your passion. And I hope you'll come on again sometime and chat with us very soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Until next time, down bitches. I love you. Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.